Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another Monday night edition of On the Ropes. I'm the Motor City Pole Checker, Mark Messerschmidt, and I'm coming at you from Detroit, Michigan. And as always, my co-host, as we do put a girl in it, is coming at you from Boston, Massachusetts. Boxing Girl, are you with us tonight?
Yes, I am.
How are you doing?
I'm doing fine today. How about yourself?
No, I'm not doing too bad. Still smarting a little bit from this weekend's Valuev-Holyfield fight. But all in all, I'll say pretty good.
Yeah, I saw that fight. They robbed old Holy.
Do you want to go ahead and take a caller and maybe we can talk a little bit about that fight?
Yeah, sure. Take a call.
All right, here we go. Caller, you're on the ropes with Boston's Boxing Girl.
Messer, JCS from BoxRec.
Hey, brother,
hi,
how you doing?
Yes.
Pretty good. Did I miss anything?
No, we just started.
Okay, what's the topic? I heard Holyfield. I heard the name.
Yep. That's the big topic, so I think we should get right into that. I mean, what was your scorecard for that fight?
Well, to be honest, I missed part of it. I missed the first three rounds, and I missed a couple in between. I had some stream problems, but, you know, out of the seven rounds I saw, I probably gave Evander like five of them, and according to most of the places I read, he probably won the first three, so if you add it all together, which is very unofficial, you know, it looked to me like he at least won eight to ten rounds.
Yep.
So... Kind of surprised. I have seen some articles out there with some writers who thought that the decision was actually correct. So
really,
yeah. So I'm guessing both of you actually agree with old Dan Rayfield this time around.
Yeah, these are one of the rare times. But yeah, I saw the fight. You know, I was watching it and I had the same problem. My stream froze, but I watched the fight later and I scored it up. And it wasn't even close. I mean, Blue really just did nothing all night long and. I had it nine rounds, 9-2 and one, even. And it just wasn't even close. I mean, Valuev just did nothing all night. His jab had really nothing on it. He was barely firing 20 shots around, landing maybe four or five. It was, you know, it was just the worst I've ever seen him. And it wasn't that Holyfield was that good either, because, you know, Holyfield probably, you know, looked a little bit better against Imbragimov. But, you know, it's just a shame that they screwed him over when he did the... Did what he needed to do to win.
Yeah, I guess we might have to sit through a rematch now. That should be just
yeah, that should be boring. You know, it's just, it was very tactical, and Holyfield barely fired, and he wasn't getting in. He didn't use his jab at all because obviously he can't go jab to jab with Valuev, but, you know, he just landed the harder shots, and he didn't get any credit from it. I don't know if the judges didn't want him to be the oldest, you know, champion to regain the title, but yeah, he just didn't get any love from the judges.
Hey, we got another caller on, so what I'm going to do is go ahead and let them on too, all right, guys?
Okay.
Yep.
Hello.
Caller, you're on the ropes with Boston's Boxing Girl and BoxRec's JCS.
Hey, guys, how you doing? Sock.
Hey, it's Sock. How's it going?
Not bad. How's everyone tonight? It's freezing where I am. I'm trying to warm up again.
Yeah, I know. It's 18 degrees out in the same area, so. How did you move that in snow?
Yeah. You got that right.
Yeah. So what did you think of the Valua Holyfield fight?
Well, it was pretty ugly. I mean,
oh yeah,
there wasn't much of a fight going on, you know. It was kind of a dance party.
Yeah, that's really what it was. I mean, Holyfield was dancing around him, but just Valua, you know, he just did nothing. I don't know if he didn't prepare for the fight or he took Holyfield lightly, but he just had nothing to offer, and it made for a really, you know, most Valua fights are pretty bad, but, you know, the last good fight I saw with him was against Chagayev.
Yeah, that was
Yeah. But, you know, he just didn't perform.
Well, you know, just like most people, I had Holyfield way out ahead, and I gave him absolutely no chance in this fight, so I was way wrong. But,
yeah.
You know.
I gave Holyfield a chance to win, you know, like three rounds from what I thought he could do still. And I just really didn't expect, you know, Holyfield was what I expected, you know, to be honest, when he got in the ring and what he looked like in there. It's just the look was, he just did nothing, you know. I mean, I don't know how you can give a guy a fight who barely landed five punches around, you know, when the other guy's landing maybe seven or eight shots, and they're actual power shots, unlike Valua and his lazy jab.
Yeah, not just the punches, but he was controlling the pace of the fight and doing all the moving, and I don't know. Valua got away with one. That's Germany.
Yeah, it's not the first time. But
do all three of you guys think that the fight was on the up and up from what you've seen, that it was a legitimate contest?
Well, you don't go to Europe and fight unless you think you can knock the guy out. I think that, you know, I say that a lot in forums, and, you know, I've got a couple razzings, but this is just another occurrence. I mean, Holyfield had no chance to knock him out. I didn't give him a chance either, but, you know, I could, you know, I think anybody could tell you he didn't really have a chance to knock him blew about, and, you know, he should have known going in there that he had to win his
but
I mean, he did win a lot of rounds, but there were those instances where he didn't do a damn thing either. So.
Oh, yeah. It's just that, you know, but it really wasn't the home field advantage or anything like that, because the crowd was all Holyfield. You know, it was all Holyfield. It was really, you know, usually when it's those foreign situations, it's the crowd influencing the judges. But that, you know, if that was the case, Holyfield would have a championship belt right now. You know, it's just something else was up in that fight, because, you know, there's just no way that Valua did enough to win that fight. I mean, not even enough to get a draw. It was just that blatant.
See, I was going to go beyond that, and I rented the fight. It cost $25 on demand with Comcast, and I called round by round. I had Holyfield up 8-1, but when I was watching that fight, I cannot tell you that I believe that Valua was given 100%. I seen where he didn't even try to cut the ring off. At points when he did let Holyfield or corner Holyfield into a corner, he let him right out without even trying to put any damage on him. I have a hard time believing that Valua had his foot on the gas for that fight.
No, I don't think so either. But when I first started seeing the first few rounds, I thought maybe Valua's just working with Holyfield, you know, trying to give the crowd something to watch and stuff. But he just had nothing to offer. I mean, he came in light, you know, light for his weight. I think he was like 3'10" or something. It's just that he just had nothing all night long. He had no rhythm, you know. His corner couldn't get him going, and, you know, I mean, Holyfield did enough to win that fight. I mean, he did more than enough. It's just that Valua did nothing.
Yeah, let me add to that. I don't think it's always the crowd influencing the judges. I think it's more dependent on who the promoter is. You don't know what's going on over there. I'm not going to sit here and pretend I'm an expert, but maybe we can get NPAL up on one of these, or Nathan, or, you know, up on one of these chats and get his opinion on it. Although I have a feeling it'll be politically correct.
Right. Me too.
Ruffle any feathers there. But I mean, not that
there's anything wrong with that.
No. I mean, and this proves it. I mean, you know, you got Spenock went 34-0 and had all those, you know, questionable majority decisions, and it happens all the time. I mean, you can get in an argument on the forums with those European posters, and they'll say the same thing about America. I mean, we've had our fair share of bad calls too, but they don't seem quite as frequent.
But you would have to say that this fight was more blatant than any other of Valua's controversial wins. I mean, over Ruiz and Larry Donald and those fights, they were fights that, you know, at least 8 rounds to 4, because this fight wasn't really even really competitive.
Those other ones are much closer. I personally didn't really have a problem with many of his other decisions. That Ruiz fight, everybody thought Ruiz won. I thought it was a draw. The Donald fight was like 7-5 either way. I mean, they were close enough to where you could see a round or two, and, you know, it swings it the other way. But this one, you know, it was like a 3 or 4 round swing. So, I have a problem when it's wider than, you know, a 2 round swing. I kind of, you know, get the eyebrow up, like, you know, what the hell is going on? But
now, do you guys think that maybe that the sanctioning bodies are trying to give Holyfield a message to retire, kind of like they did with George Foreman when he fought Shannon Briggs, but everyone thought George Foreman won that fight, and they gave it to the other guy, the younger guy, because I think they wanted Foreman to, you know, stay off from the boxing world.
I doubt it, because boxing's hurting right now, and that would have been big if Holyfield won that title.
Absolutely.
You could bring him back here, maybe you stick him on a few commercials, I don't know, but you know, and I don't know if you still agree with this boxing girl, but, you know, they could get him a Klitschko fight, maybe. You seem to think he might win a couple rounds. Do you still think that?
Oh, against Klitschko? I never thought Holyfield would win really any rounds.
Didn't he stop? I thought we had an argument on whether he'd win a round or two in a past call.
No, that was James Tony.
That was Tony and Klitschko.
It was still all the same level. Speaking of which, I meant to get up on Messer on that. Tony Holyfield, the rematch. What do you think?
I think it would be a evenly matched fight, and it ought to be matched up if both guys need money instead of being in the world title scene where they probably are outmatched versus the Klitschko's, that they ought to throw it together, and it should get marketed big time and put it out there, because they both got some pretty darn decent skills. But I've got Chauncey Welliver on the line here, so I'm going to click him in on this conversation. Okay, guys?
All right. Hello.
Mr. Welliver, you're on the ropes.
What's going down today? Sounds like a whole lot from what I've been listening to. How's everybody doing today?
Yeah, we're doing good. How about yourself?
Oh, doing terrific. Just listening about the politics of Europe, and there are many politics of Europe. I mean, just listening to some conversations, you know, that you guys are having, you know, there's a lot of politics over there. You know, as JCS said, you got to score a knockout when you go over there, even with the sanctioning bodies. You know, I went over there, and I'm not going to throw any names around, but there was a certain promoter. He wasn't involved in my fight over there, but he said, listen, he said, I have in a different country, I have a commission. He said, I can do anything I want. I could pick the judges. None of my guys will ever lose in this particular country. So, and that's why I put shows on in this small country. So I put big fights on this small country, and my guys never lose. So, you know, when he told me that, you know, for my fight, I was like, all right, you know, well, I guess I ain't going to win here. You know, not that I had a huge shot of winning anyway. But, you know, Europe is a very, very hard place to get the win.
Yep.
There you go. Straight from the horse's mouth.
What was your thoughts, Chauncey, on the Holyfield versus Blue fight?
You know, to be honest, I didn't watch it because I kind of figured, I mean, it wasn't going to be much of a fight. And, you know, being a pro boxer, I can't toss around 24-95 all day. you know, but it was one of those things, you know, you almost knew going in. You know, I mean, once again, you know, just like you guys had said, I didn't give Holyfield much of a shot going into it. So it was one of those things I didn't really want to watch. I kind of wanted to see the undercard just because I was over there in training camp in Germany, you know, just a couple weeks ago with Valuev and his camp and Pianeta and all those guys. So I kind of wanted to see the undercard, but kind of figured this result was going to happen whether Holyfield scored a knockout or won a decision or anything. They were going to find a way to screw him.
See, they only showed the last 2 rounds of the Pianeta fight, but that was, from what I heard from the announcers, was a real entertaining fight, and both guys in round 12 were still looking fresh and going at each other.
Well, hey, you know, I mean, thank God Pianeta was fresh in that 12th round, you know, because, you know, I did the sparring for him, so if he did bad, then that reflects badly on me. So I guess I got to give a thumbs up to Francesco on that one. He didn't make me look bad.
You're out there doing your job. Hey, Sock, you got anything you want to ask Mr. Welliver?
Yeah, sure, Chauncey. How you doing, man? Good to talk to you.
Pretty good. How you doing today?
Good, good. So you fly a lot in New Zealand, and I know you're like a little folk hero out there. Now, do you think that there's any type of issues similar to Germany like there would be in New Zealand? As in, like,
you know, I would say there is, but there isn't. You know, not quite as bad as Germany. Obviously, there's some bad things that have went down in New Zealand, you know, but I would say that's mainly just one person screwing something up. It's not somebody intentionally filling out their scorecard before the fight even starts, you know, or nothing that. In Germany, I mean, we hear about something bad happening all the time. You know, I've been to New Zealand, seen many fights in New Zealand, and you don't see a whole lot of shady business going on down there.
Yeah, it doesn't.
There's a couple questionable things down there. You know, like there's one promotion where this guy says, "I'm not going to promote a fight unless Islanders judge the fights." You know, so you know that's a little bit. You know, and then he puts Islanders on his fight. You know, Islanders meaning Tongans, Fijians, Samoans, things of that nature.
Oh yeah.
You know, so it almost makes you think. Well, wait a minute. What if I go over there and fight one of these guys? You know, I got, you know, three Samoan judges I got to fight along with Samoan. You know,
yeah,
and here I am, the fat dorky white guy. You know, I'm their gold medal. I'm the guy they want to beat. you know. So yeah, it's a little, you know, I don't think they're trying to screw anybody. I think they're just not. You know, I don't have the education to say it. They're just not smart enough to word it right. You know, to bring in different judges.
Yeah. Hey, I got one more question for you. In your illustrious career here, you have one hell of a chin. That's a noted fact. Who that you have fought has hit you the hardest?
In a fight, you know, I'm gonna have to say, you know, Boxer X got the thing. It shows how many stoppages. You gotta say so at least, you know, simply because they stopped the fight. I thought it shouldn't have been stopped. But personally, I would say I've been hit harder by maybe Wesley Martin, who wasn't even great record. You know, this is a guy maybe 5'10", and he went out there and he could crack. I came back out for the first time and told my brother, I know how he knocked out all these guys that have been knocking out. You know, his only problem is he only threw one at a time.
Yeah.
You know, so I knew I could weather the storm, get hit once and get out of the way. You know, with guys like Solis, you got 10 punches coming at you where it's like, whoa. You know, hold on a minute, you know. But, you know, that's the one thing I could say kind of good for myself is I haven't fought too many hard hitters, and that's why I call on the phone and not sound too messed up.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
You know, but sparring—that's a whole other thing. You know, I mean, I've sparred. You know, there's been guys that have hit me hard. You know, guys such as Mike Tyson. You know, guys like that. You know, guys you don't expect, like Duncan Dacuari, who, you know, I tip my hat to that guy every time I think about him. Duncan Dacuari is without a doubt the hardest hitter I've ever been in there with.
Now, wow.
Kane Cameron, David Tua, all of them. Duncan Dacuari will punch his way through a prison wall. That guy can crack.
That's with headgear and bigger gloves too, I would assume, huh?
He wears 22-ounce gloves, you know, because
wow.
He has so much power. He's worried about breaking his hand.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's amazing the power Duncan has. He's, you know, he can crack. You know, I mean, once again, he's kind of got that problem of only one punch at a time. Also, you know, but
yeah.
If Duncan were to get serious, you know, he could be a champion. Once again, his speed is a big issue. Apparently, you know, he got stopped by Stacy Frazier. You got to say his chin is a little bit of an issue, you know. But other than that, I don't want to run into him in a dark alley or even a well lit up alley. I don't want to run into him.
Well, folks, we got about 10 more. We got about 10 more minutes before we're going to end up calling Mr. Greg Haugen. So, Boxing Girl and JCS, I want to see if you guys got a question for Chauncey.
I have a question. Chauncey, you've had like 40 fights and you're only 25 years old. I mean, what is it like to fight on the club scene to get that many, you know, fights in?
it's terrific. You know, everybody says, you know, why don't you like going to Vegas or California? You know what? I love being a big fish in a small sea, you know, because I know my limitations. I'm never going to go fight Nikolai Volov in Switzerland. I'm never gonna fight on that big stage. You know, I go to New Zealand, I'm a rock star. I fight here in Spokane, I'm a rock star. You know, the beauty of fighting in these places, I'm not going to fight anybody really tough, so the recovery time's not that much. You know, so you know, I could come right back in a couple months and fight, you know, and things like that. You know, if you think about it, the one super tough guy I fought, Salif, you know, I got to take a little bit of a break now after him, you know, due to the cut. You know, so that's what I get for finally stepping up and fighting somebody tough.
Yep, were you paid well financially for that fight, going all the way overseas?
Oh, yeah, I was paid real good. You know, the promoters treated me greatly. You know, it was a Klitschko-Don King promotion, but it was Arena that took care of me. And Arena, they were great. You know, I mean, I went to Amsterdam and Paris afterwards, and they paid for my train tickets there, gave me food money for the extra week I stayed. That's something no promoter does. No promoter does that kind of stuff. I mean, they took extra good care of me, and you know, I would be more than happy to go back over there, you know, with a little more training, even though once again, those guys are tough. You know, once again, I'm not in that league. You know, I mean, guys like Solis, you know, I mean, I know now they're a world above me. You know, but now I know I'm a club fighter. You know, me and Stacey Goodson, we're right there on the same page. You know, we're in the club fighting circuits, and we're going to end up being the kings of it. And that's what I love. I'd rather be like, once again, you know, big fish, small seas, and little tiny fish that nobody even sees in the ocean.
There you go.
Yep. Have you now? You've promoted some shows before. I remember you promoted a show in Idaho, I think, with Iran Barkley. Do you plan to do more of that in your future?
You know, I want to do more. You know, I actually have one coming up in April. You know. Real small stuff I'm doing, you know, because, I mean, I wasn't raised with no money, and unfortunately, fighting the club fights, you don't make that much money, you know, but the thing is, yes, I want to do a lot of promotions, and, you know, I would have no problem if somebody called me right now and said, hey, you want to be a promoter or a fighter? I'll give you the money to be a promoter. Not a problem. I would quit fighting. Well, I need to have one more. I don't want to go out on that last fight. You know, but I would have no problem giving up the fighting end of it for the promotion end of it.
Yeah. JCS, do you have any questions for Chauncey?
Sure. You know, maybe you told us this before on the forums. I don't know. You've been pretty quiet lately, but I guess you kind of answered this. I know you got a lot of fights. I'm not sure what your usual preparation is, but I guess my only question was, is boxing, you know, your full-time thing now? And if it's not, will it ever be? Or are you just kind of relegated to taking fights on pretty short notice, being a sparring partner, and that sort of thing?
You know, mainly, I would say being a sparring partner has been my main way to make money. I've made more sparring than I have actual fighting. You know, the money I made to fight Solis, you know, I've made more for that same promoter sparring their guy. You know, so, I mean, it's real. You know, sparring, there's so much money, and, you know, because I'm a guy, you know, I could take a punch, I throw a lot of punches, and I don't hit hard enough to hurt you, so I'm the best sparring partner in the world. You know, Francesco Pianata, he just fought a guy 6'6", but they begged for me to come, you know, and I told him, I said, now listen, you guys are fighting somebody tall, what good am I going to be? I'm a little short, fat guy. They said, yeah, but you're going to keep on coming, and you're not going to cut him or anything like that. I said, well, if you want to pay me, here I come. And the free trip to Germany. Perfect. That's the added-on bonus.
Yep.
Hey, one thing I'd like to have Chauncey comment on was that he was there on that undercard fight in Solis the night that they put on that extravagant show with for Vitaly Klitschko's comeback. I was hoping you could maybe comment on that a little bit for us.
You know, the one thing, you know, as I said, I like fighting on the club fighting circuit, you know, but fighting on that big stage once, you know, that felt great. You know, that was so cool because that was no fight in Germany. That was an event. You know, that'd be like Oscar De La Hoya, you know, obviously not now, but De La Hoya at his highest, you know, coming back, you know, after 4 years, you know, after being on top of the world, come back and fighting the best in his weight class. And beating him, you know, we thought Oscar De La Hoya fighting Ricardo Mayorga after a year and a half was big. This was giant over there. People's cars were painted with Vitaly Klitschko on it. I mean, here's a small little story. I went to a restaurant. You know, I don't remember the name of the restaurant, but we go in, and the waiters, you know, we're talking to him, and he says, so what are you guys doing in Germany? I said, oh, I'm fighting on the Klitschko card tomorrow. And he said, oh, really? And he walks off, and he goes into the kitchen, and I'm like, oh, really? All right. You know, he didn't even take orders. He comes back out. He says, so you're fighting Vitaly Klitschko tomorrow? I said, no, I'm not fighting Klitschko. I said, I'm on the undercard. I'm buried in the undercard. He said, oh. He said, I was going to have the cook poison your food. I said, whoa. I said, no, I'm not fighting. I said, no, I'm fighting the guy that's not even from here. I'm from closer than you guys are. I'm from closer than he is to Germany. So, you know, but he said, I'm not kidding. He said, we love Vitaly Klitschko here. He said, we would have poisoned your food, and he will win. So, you know, that's a small little taste of how much they love the Klitschko's. They're willing to poison some guy that's, you know, about to give them probably the best tip of their life, you know, in the restaurant business.
As I said, that kind of adds to the whole home turf advantage there.
Yeah, really.
Food poisoning is a new aspect. I didn't consider that one.
I'm gonna say one thing. You know, we went to the dressing room after the fight. I know Bose Edwards real good. You know, we're walking to the back room. He says, Chauncey, come on in. We're sitting back there with Sam Peter. And you know, I used to spar Sam in Vegas and stuff. And we're all sitting there, and he's sitting there talking about some women that he got in Las Vegas right before he left, and he's going to go there. And it's like, dude, you just lost the heavyweight championship of the world. You know, this is after the fight. It's like, how the heck, you know, I mean, something seemed a little fishy there. I'm not going to say it wasn't on the up and up, but it sure didn't seem all there, you know. And then, I don't know, I don't want to say too much. Yeah, Sam Peter, you know, I mean. Yeah. I lost fighting for the WBC international title, and I mean I was close to tears. I wanted to keep on going. This guy just quit in the biggest fight of his life, and he's sitting there talking about Poland women and this Las Vegas club and this and that. Where do you guys want to go when we get off the plane? Something didn't seem right. Maybe he knew he wasn't going to win. I don't know. You know, it just didn't seem right.
Yeah, I think Peter had the feeling that if Vitaly Klitschko made it to the ring in health, that he wasn't going to stand too much of a chance. I mean, Vitaly's the kind of fighter that's never been knocked down in his career. And his only two losses are fights that he was ahead in, and he got injuries. You know, he got cut in one fight, and then he had a rotator cuff injury. You know, and maybe Peter went into that fight mindset as soon as he knew that Klitschko was going to show up.
Very possible.
You know, I mean, maybe he got screwed mentally when he seen, that Klitschko was going to show up, you know, without a broken ankle or broken back or anything like that. And real quick, I must correct you because I was corrected on this a million times. It's not Vitaly Klitschko, it's Vitaly Klitschko.
Yeah.
We were told that many times in Germany. I felt almost retarded while, you know, they said, no, it's not Vitaly, it's Vitaly. And I'm like, oh,
yeah.
Okay.
He changed his name to sound more German.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, hey, if it sells more tickets and makes the event that they had, I'll change my name too.
Yeah. So, Nessie, do you have any more questions?
No, I don't have any questions. Actually, I'm out of here. I may call back in, but I'll be sure to listen to the rest of the show.
All right, good to have you, Jason. Appreciate you calling in.
All right. Talk to you later.
All right. Thanks for the questions, man.
See you, Twink. On the forums later.
So we're going to be calling Greg Howden shortly here in a couple of minutes. Sock, you got anything else real quick you want to ask Chauncey?
Well, sure. I mean, can you give me a couple names, like guys that you have sparred? I didn't even think to ask you about your sparring. I'm sure you fought some guys.
This is off the top of my head. I mean, Ruslan Chagaev, Klitschko, you know, Vladimir Klitschko, Mike Tyson, Clifford Etienne, Shannon Briggs, Juan Carlos Gomez, Audley Harrison, who I got to say, I don't know what the heck happened in his career. You know, that guy is awesome. He is awesome fighter. You know, I would compare him with Juan Carlos Gomez, who I think has a damn good shot at beating Klitschko, you know, but the problem with Audley, he just doesn't seem to pick it up in the ring. I don't know. I mean, Avi's a great fighter, but, you know, guys of that nature, guys that are, you know, just barely win the title, or guys that are going to fight for the title. But no, you know, no legends of the game, you know, with the obvious exception, Mike Tyson.
Yeah. What year did you spar Mike Tyson? Was it, you know, towards the end?
Oh yeah, it was toward the end. It was actually before the Lewis fight. You know, I was only there for a couple days because I was working with Jack Mosley at the time. We were in Las Vegas. I got to be there at the press conference when he bit Lennox's leg. So that's kind of a real cool thing, you know. That, you know, I didn't care to see the fight. We knew what was going to happen in the fight, but anything leading up to the fight, you didn't know. You didn't know what to expect from Mike Tyson. Like I said, you knew what to expect in the fight. Tyson was probably going to get beat. But when we went to that press conference, we knew something was going to happen because he was not in a good mood that whole week, you know. So, but, you know, I got paid well, you know. It was a great experience. I could always say I sparred Mike Tyson, you know. And,
absolutely.
You know,
We're going to have to get back to that at some point. I'd also like to hear about the Shannon Briggs deal a little bit more because I know you were, what were you, like 17 at that time?
Oh, yeah, I was 17 years old, you know. And
I know there's
Shannon,
good story there that we heard on Box Rec, but I'm going to switch over right now, and we're going to call up Mr. Greg Haugen.
Cool. I'll be here.
All right. I'll be back with you guys in a second.
So do you guys have any interesting questions for Greg?
Oh, yeah. We have a couple of them. I saw his a couple of rebroadcast fights between him and Vinny Paz on Classic Sports. So I'll ask him what it's like being there with the Tasmanian Devil.
Here we go.
Hello?
Hello, Mr. Greg Haugen. You're on the ropes with the Motor City Pole Checker, Boston's Boxing Girl, and one of your good buddies, Chauncey Welliver.
Hey, how's it going, man?
It's going great. I want to thank you, first of all, for coming on the show. And I noticed that you're rated one of the top 50 lightweights of all time.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so we're hoping to get you to comment a little bit about some of your career and what you got going on here tonight. So I'm going to open it up and see if my co-host, Boxing Girl, has any questions for you, all right?
Sure.
Hey, Greg.
Fire.
So I guess we start off first with the title fight that you won the title. You won the IBF title back in 1982. Actually, was it 1982? No, sorry, it was 1982. 86. Yep. Reading that. But, yeah, tell us a little bit about that.
I fought a guy from Detroit, Michigan, Kronk's gym, Jimmy Paul, supposedly one of the best, or supposedly the best lightweight out of the three. It was him, Hector Camacho, and Edmund Rosario were the three champions, and supposedly Jimmy had the best jab in the business, and he was a good fighter, no doubt about it.
Yep. Speaking of Hector Camacho, you were also the first person to give him his first loss in his career.
Yeah, I was. He took me light, you know. He was getting ready to fight, I guess it was a battle of the undefeated. Don King had him set up to fight Chavez after he beat me, supposedly, but they forgot to ask me about it.
Spoiler.
Yeah. So,
yeah, but I would like to say that in that rematch, you gave him everything he could handle also, you know.
Well, I thought I won the second fight more so than the first fight. And he did, too, because he was almost to his dressing room before they talked him into coming back into the ring because, you know, they had the decision in the bag, I guess.
Yeah,
but,
well,
you know,
he had to have been expecting you in that fight, and he almost got taken out there, too, so...
Well, you know, he was a tough guy. He's a hard guy to, you know, that's one of the reasons he hasn't been knocked out too many times, if at all. I mean, you know, Hector's the kind of guy you're going to land hit shots on, but you don't land two, three, four shots on at a time. I mean, you know, you might hit him with one clean shot most of the time, but most of the time he's going to be pulling away or, you know, he's always doing something to keep from getting hit flush. So it's a sign of a good fighter.
Camacho is one of the rare fighters that's actually never been knocked out in his entire career. I mean, he even fought earlier this year, and he still hasn't been KO'd.
What? He fought this year?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he fought this year.
Oh, yeah, after he got out of prison.
Yeah, I'm not sure who he fought, but, yeah, he, apparently he didn't look too great in the fight, but, I mean, he's 46 now, and obviously stuff starts not quite the same when you get to that age.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine fighting. I mean, you know, I know he's not too much younger than I am, and, you know, and after you've been locked up for a couple of years or so, I mean, you know, and not fighting, it's, you know, boxing's not a game like bowling or pool or something where you can take a year or two off and then pick it up again where you left off. You're not going to do that with boxing because, you know, your reflexes aren't the same, the timing's not the same, your eyesight's not the same, your reflexes aren't the same. You're just not going to pop back in and do it like you were doing before.
Yep.
So we got a caller on with us. His name is Sock. Sock, you got anything you want to ask the champ here?
Sure, Mr. Hogan. It's great to talk to you. What have you been up to lately? Are you still working with any fighters or still finding your way around the gym?
Yeah, I'm stuck up here in the corner of the United States in Washington State. And, I got me a couple pretty good fighters right now I'm working with. Most of the rest of them I just ran off because none of them want to train and none of them want to work as hard as it takes to be a good fighter. I didn't like losing when I was fighting, and I don't like, you know, I don't like it now any more than I did then. So if you're not going to be willing to work and give it 110%, then you're wasting my time just as much as your time. So I got a kid that's fighting in about 2.5 weeks in State Line, Nevada. In fact, it might be on ESPN. His name's Chuck K. Willis. He's a heavyweight. He's 4-0. Not a real big kid. He's about 215 pounds, 5'10", which isn't real big for heavyweight. But he's fast. He moves well. You know, we're definitely going to have to use his speed as a strength. You know, he's not going to be able to stand in front of them 6'2", 3'4", 5" guys that are 270, 80 pounds trading punches with him. You know, that's not going to be his fight. His fight's going to be inside, breaking him down, you know, wearing him down, going to work on there. And I got another kid that's a welterweight that I've been working a little bit with. His name's Fred Tukes, who's a I believe Fred's 8-1. He's a southpaw welterweight. He was just up in camp beating up on De La Hoya. And then this other kid I've been working with, he's a white boy, not too bad. He's a good boxer, not much power. His name's Jason Davis. I think Jason's 11-2 now with 2 KOs. So not a real big puncher. He's a good boxer, and that's about the only three I'm working with right now. I was training my son. I got a 20-year-old son, and he's had 4 amateur fights, but he's discovered girls, so I've kind of just let him do his own thing, and I'm not going to force him to do something I want him to do. It's got to be something he wants to do, or I'm not going to, you know, help him.
Well, that's good. I'll definitely be looking for that. Said he's going to be fighting on ESPN?
Well, this one that's January 9th, it's a fight that's supposed to be ESPN telecast. I'm not sure if Jonte's going to get on it. Last couple fights, he's been the swing bout, which means you got to stand around and wait for the, you know, a quick knockout or something. I'm not a real big fan of the swing bout because you're constantly warming up, cooling off, warming up, cooling off, because you don't know when you're going to go in. You know, I mean, waiting on somebody to get knocked out in neither one of the fights he's been on TV. So if they choose to put him on a swing bout, I think I'll just tell them that, no, I'm not interested in that. We'll go with the last fight of the night, which won't be on TV, but at least we're going to know when we're fighting. You know, he's a kid that you'd be looking for, you know. I mean, his cousin's Patrick Willis, he's a linebacker for the 49ers, so there's some athleticism in the family, you know, and the kid's only been fighting about 4 years, amateur a couple years ago. He was number one in the country as an amateur after only, you know, 2 years of learning how to fight. And he learned from the guys up, you know, in Tacoma, which aren't the best teachers of the game of boxing. So, you know, the kid's pretty talented. I mean, I think he's going to do something pretty good.
Is there any chance with him being at 215 that you might eventually be able to move him down to cruiserweight?
Well, you know, I've had a lot of people ask me that. And like I say, why? I mean, there's no money in cruiserweight. You know, I mean, I guess if he was like Evander, I could keep him down there, you know, light heavyweight, cruiserweight, and then feed him a bunch of steroids and pump him up. And but you know, we're not going to do that. We're going to get him the natural way. And you know, and Mike Tyson wasn't that big coming up to begin with. You know, Mike was, you know, probably 225 when he first came up, about 5'10". But you know, Mike was a little different breed of animal than this guy here. I mean, this kid doesn't have the power, obviously, that Mike had, to have the explosiveness that Mike had. I mean, hasn't been taught that yet. Not that he can't be taught that, but he's never been shown that. So, you know, they're a couple different kind of fighters. So Jonte's a real fast guy. He's got good hand speed, good foot speed. So that's going to be one of his strengths. And, you know, there's no sense in fighting to give other guys strengths. You got to use your strength.
Right. The reason I ask that is because there's been like I'll refer to a guy like B.J. Flores, who was coming up as a heavyweight to make the bigger money, but then once his name got up there, he dropped down to cruiserweight once he could get into the title picture.
Well, I'm not saying that he couldn't go, you know. Yeah, I know he could make cruiserweight. I mean, you know, but at this point in time, like I've said, why? I mean, it's just, it's not a very lucrative or interesting division. But, you know, there's a guy there now that Polish kid or something out of Chicago. I've seen him fight. He seems to be a pretty decent fighter, so maybe he'll draw some interest to the cruiserweight division. But, you know, for years and years, there's not been much excitement in that division. You know, so at this point in time, I think he'll stay at heavyweight for now anyway.
That's real good. And then the other thing I wanted to make sure that we got out for you is what you're doing with your Greg Haugen Foundation. I was hoping you could talk a little bit about that before we get into some more of your past fights.
Yeah, I start foundation. I was going to do it, help lower income inner city kids here. And we're going to start a gym and build a gym and have an area for them to go to. But, you know, after I found out that my grandson, my oldest grandson's autistic, I've kind of switched directions and went in that direction. So the fundraisers that we were having, you know, they're all, you know, focused around autism and anything I can do to raise awareness or you know, interest for people, something that's true to me and, you know, very dear to my heart. Seeing how my grandson's one of them.
Well, I was looking at your website, and I know we were talking earlier, and you said it's going to be getting updated pretty soon, but people can follow what's going on with your foundation at greghaugenfoundation.com, right?
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah, and I'll be updating that. More, in fact, I just got a hold of a guy. I've been having a guy in California kind of doing it, but I got a guy in Washington now that I'm going to have updating more recently stuff and, you know, maybe more stuff on my record because there's not a lot of stuff on there as far as, you know, half of my record or half of the stuff about my fights. So, you know, I mean, there's a lot of people out there that get on it. And so, you know, I think that's something I need to update, you know, every month or so people can see some fresh new things and, you know, see what's going on.
Yeah, we wish you the best of luck with that. And I checked that site out, and it's a good source of information about what direction that Greg's trying to take his training life and his basically – you're looking at helping out youngsters in the community, right?
Well, yeah, I like working with young kids. I mean, you know, getting them off the street, helping them out, keeping them out of gangs. You know, I mean, if you're in a gang, you're a follower. You're not a leader. You know, you got people telling you what to do, when to do it. You know, you got to be part of something. But, you know, I'm trying to explain to all the kids, if you're in a gang, you're a follower. You're not a leader. You need to get out there and you need to lead the way. You need to lead your own way. Make your own way. So, you know, I enjoy working with kids and, you know, something that, you know, they, most of them don't have attitudes and egos yet, you know, so it's pretty easy to work with them because, you know, they don't back talk and they don't know everything yet. So, you know, it's something that I enjoy doing.
Yeah, I commend you for that, you know, and I remember back in the day, you know, people had problems. They'd settle at things in the backyard with the gloves on. There was none of this 15 people beating down, kicking on some kid, you know, that's just, that's punk behavior.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, and this teaches them not only, you know, discipline, but it teaches them self-respect. I mean, you know, they're going to have some pride in themselves. They're not going to be able to, you know, somebody's not going to be able to walk up and push them around and say, give me your money or this or that. You know, at least they'll have a little confidence in themselves that they might be able to defend themselves. Instead of just having to hand it over, or, you know, if you got two guys on you, you know, you'll be able to defend yourself. And, you know, I mean, it's not something that, you know, maybe, you know, not every kid's going to become a professional fighter. You know, that's not the goal. The goal is to give them respect and you know, and teach them discipline and, you know, and self-confidence. And, you know, a lot of good things go with that. So, if, you know, you're told you're stupid so many times, eventually your kid's going to believe you're stupid. Well, you know, I mean, if you're constantly getting bullied, then, you know, that's going to be pretty much the way it is your whole life. You're going to be getting pushed around and bullied. So, you know.
Yeah, that's great there to hear it described like that, you know, self-defense. You know, you don't go out there on the offensive somebody, you know, but...
No, I mean, you know,
great to have those tools.
I want none of these guys to be bullies. I mean, it's not something you know, it's something that you know, you're going to have if you need it. It's not something that you need to have, you know, to walk around picking on people. It's something, you know, you're going to be able to stand up and say, hey, you ain't going to do that to me. I mean, you know, this is first and last time, or this is, I've had it, you know. And, you know, the kid stands up for himself, and then pretty soon realizes, hey, I'm not a loser. I'm not a dummy, or I'm not a punk, you know, like all those guys are telling me. So, you know, I've seen it happen. You know, I've seen a lot of good things happen from it. But, you know, it also is a very tough sport. I mean, you know, a lot of parents view it as a very brutal sport, which it can be. But, you know, there's a lot of skill that goes into it. I mean, you know, there's a lot of skill. So, if you're taught by the right people, if you're taught by a teacher, you'll be able to teach it. But, you know, if you're taught by a trainer, and anybody can throw a towel over their shoulder and squirt water in their mouth and say they're a boxing trainer. You know, you go out there, throw a jab, throw your hands, this or that. But it comes down to showing you how to transfer that weight and shift that, you know, and leverage and things like that. That's not something a lot of guys out there know, because they're not teachers, they're trainers. It's a big difference.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I'm glad that we've got you out there in Washington, even though you are stuck up in the corner, out there looking out for some kids. But are you willing to take some questions about your career now?
Sure.
Hey, boxing girl, why don't you shoot something?
All right. Well, Greg, what about your fights that you had with Vinny Paz? I know the first one, I've seen it on Classic Sports, and it was quite a controversial win by the Paz.
They robbed me. They robbed me.
Yes, they did.
Not robbery. You know, I fought him. I beat him up for 15 rounds. Was sure that I had the fight. Was sure that I had the fight. I looked across the ring, and he just beat the shit. And I had one little mark on my face, and it was from the headbutt. So, you know, I knew that I clearly won the fight, but, you know, I manned up, took it like a man, went back in the gym, trained harder, got in better shape, came back, you know, a few months later and beat him up even worse. And this time there was no doubt about it.
Yep.
What? Hold on. No, I'm on the Oh, sorry, I'm being yelled at. No, no. I'm ready.
All right. All right, so one of you, also talk about you, you fought Pernell Whitaker, prime Pernell Whitaker. Tell me what it was like to fight somebody that was slick and as defensively prowess as Pernell Whitaker, sweepy.
Well, he was definitely the best skilled fighter in the bunch that I fought, and I did fight some good fighters, but when it comes down to it, Pernell was the slickest, craftiest guy. I mean, you know, southpaws are a tough thing to fight anyway, but when you got a slick, crafty southpaw that can bend way down and slip out of the way, pivots out of the way, and, you know, that's a nightmare. So, yeah, it was a tough fight. You know, it was a fight that I didn't want to fight. Not that I didn't want to fight him, but I just didn't want to fight him in his hometown. Like, I'd been fighting all these guys because I had an idiot for a manager that would take, you know, $5,000 or $10,000 more to fight him in his hometown. Well, you know, I didn't mind fighting on the road, you know, and going, you know, I mean, once in a while, but not every fight. I mean, I'm the champion. I shouldn't have to do that. So that fight was kind of a boycott fight. I just went out there and really refused to fight. I mean, I just held my hands up for 12 rounds and followed him around. That was my way of protesting. I mean, I fought a little bit, but, you know, I mean, I look back now and I definitely could have fought a lot of different fight, but that was my way of just kind of protesting my manager being an idiot.
Yeah. Mester, do you have any questions about those fights?
You know, what I was going to ask him about is because I think we got a special opportunity tonight to talk to a champion who won his title at 15 rounds, and then 2 months later he went ahead and defended it when they changed the rules to 12 rounds. So I was hoping you could comment a little bit on that round change there for us, Greg.
Well, I just think that, you know, the 15 rounds is a world title fight distance, and the 12 rounds is American titles, USA and ABF. You know, there's a lot. I mean, you know, that's a championship territory from the 12th round to the 15th round. I mean, that's 9 more minutes. When you're dead tired at the end of the 12th round and you still have to go 9 minutes, that's a bad feeling. So I just think it separates the man from the boys. And it's, you know, I mean, they cut it back because they thought people were getting hurt in the later rounds, the last couple of rounds, the 13, 14, 15 rounds, so they cut it back to 12. And I'm not a big fan of it. You know, if anything, they should have made more instead of less.
Yeah, I thought you could give us a pretty unique perspective there because it was only two months later, you know. And did your training change at all when you were going into that next fight, and knowing it was only 12 rounds?
Well, I mean, it's your mindset that goes, you know, that you really change. I mean, you really don't change a whole lot about the training you're doing because, you know, you want to be able to go strong 12 rounds. You know, if it's not 15 rounds, you want to go strong 12 rounds. So I think it was just more of a mindset change, you know. You know, focusing yourself in on 12 rounds. You know, you don't have that extra 3 rounds when, you know, that I know that I was the kind of fighter that those rounds are usually going to help because, you know, I'm going to be getting stronger and, you know, I'm still going to be coming on, you know, 12th, 13th, 14th round. So I always thought it benefited a guy like me, but, you know, I was never really a big fan of it at all.
Yeah, well, I've got a younger club fighter here. He's in my chat room. He wants to call in, and this guy is notorious for not training properly, even for 4-round fights. You think it'd be possible for me to click him over, and you could give him maybe a little bit of advice on how important it is to at least give yourself the chance to come into a bout fully prepared to go the distance?
Yeah, no problem.
So there you go, Andrew. Call in, and I will click you right over.
Yeah, I mean, if you're not training, you're, you know, you've already lost half the battle. I mean, you know, there's a lot of guys that I fought that had a lot more talent than I did, but I was in better shape than they were. I persevered, and I overcome their strengths and wore them down. You know, the constant pressure wears people down when you're okay. pressuring them here.
All right, I'm
here.
About to click him on, all right?
Yeah, no problem.
Andrew Kid Thunder Hartley, you're on the ropes, and you're on the phone with top 50 lightweight of all time, three-time world champ, two-weight class world champ, Greg Haugen.
Hey, what's up, everybody? How y'all doing today?
What's going on?
Hey, what's going on? Hey, I just had a question. You know, like they said, I'm a 2-14 fighter. I do have videos.
You're
on
a what?
YouTube that I'm a 2-14 fighter.
Or that's your record?
2-14.
As a pro?
As a pro.
Holy moly, man. You better get another trade, buddy. I mean, 2-14, you know, why is that?
I do have videos. I do have videos on the YouTube. Now, I have fought Rodney the Pitbull Jones, and I've also fought Ocean Fagan.
Well, tell me, do you have an idiot for a manager, or why? I mean, why? Huh?
Stacy Goodnight Goodson's my manager.
Who is?
Stacy Goodnight Goodson.
Oh, I don't know who that is, but it doesn't sound like he's got your best interest in mind. And you know, I mean, if you're not in shape, that could be why you're 2-14. But you got to have pride. I mean, you know, this isn't a you can't be doing this to collect checks, man. You got to understand, any fight could be your last fight. You know, I mean, getting hit in the head's not healthy. You know, I mean, any punch in the head could be your last punch. So you have to take that into factor one. Factor two is you got to have some self-pride. If you don't have any pride in yourself and you don't want to train, you're in the wrong sport, man. I'm telling you, it's a rough business, you know. And the only thing I can tell you is you have to be in tip-top shape for every fight. Because there's a lot of fights that are guys that I fought, like the guy from Detroit, Michigan, Jimmy Paul. He had more talent than I did, but I just kept coming. I was in relentless. I was in top shape. I went 15 rounds and I kept coming the whole time. And you know, and believe me, there was a lot of days that I put in the gym. You know, I was training in the morning, I train in the afternoon, and I run at night. I mean, it's got to be a full time job, because if it's not, you're going to get hurt. And I'm telling you this from somebody who knows. It's not healthy to get hit in the head. Because look at all the fights that you've had that you've been hit in. But look at all the fights, you know, look at all the times you've been hit in the gym just getting ready for those fights.
Yeah,
That's something you need to think about. Because when you're my age, and I'm telling you, I just got back from the World Boxing Hall of Fame. See, a lot of these guys that I fought with, and they're real in bad shape, man, real bad shape. Don't walk right, don't talk right. Something's messed up with every one of them almost. So I'm telling you now, that's not something that you want to be giving anybody free shots. And if you're not in tip-top shape, you probably should go get a different job.
Yeah, he ended up hanging up on us here. But in defense of his manager, you know, he has been told his last fight was canceled because he didn't do enough training, and he's been told he's got to get in the ring. I was just hope he wanted to call in. I figured that'd be a great opportunity for him to talk to one of the best of all time.
Well,
it
doesn't sound like his head's in it. You know, he might be doing it for the wrong reason. A lot of these guys want to do it to say they're fighters. Well, you know, when you're 2-14, that's not fighting. You're an opponent. I mean, you know, there's two kind of fighters. There's, you know, catchers and there's punters, you know, punchers and there's catchers. And, you know, and you have to have pride in yourself. And I, obviously the kid doesn't have any pride. You know, it's a tough racket.
Hopefully he takes your advice to heart and starts putting more training into it. Because he's a fighter that's learning on the job, and he actually has an internet following, you know.
That's a tough trade to learn, on the job training. I mean, and especially when you've got an idiot for manager. And I know, believe me, if it wasn't for me being able to fight, and you know, I mean, I had over 300 amateur fights. People don't realize that, but I started fighting when I was 5 years old. I had a lot of fights, but if it wasn't for me being able to fight and knowing what I'm doing, with my idiot manager, there's something, you know, I could have been seriously hurt. Because they're going to throw you the wolves. They're going to see dollar signs. They're going to want to make a few bucks at your expense. Oh, well, he gets knocked out. He gets hurt. Tough shit. I don't care. You know, I mean, I'll find another one. That's basically the way it is. So, you know, I mean, if you're not looking out for yourself in this game, nobody else is going to, because there's a lot of those managers that are out there that are just parasites. Feed off guys like that to just, you know, to make a buck because they don't want to go get a job.
Well, I know his manager personally, and they've actually brought in debut guys off the street, and then he still ended up losing. So.
Oh, well, then it's his fault. You know, the kid's not a cape. The kid doesn't want to do what he's supposed to be doing. Well, then he should, you know. And that's another thing, too, is how do commissions should be seriously looked at. How do commissions give guys that are 2-14 a license? I mean, you know, that's how people get seriously hurt. You know, I mean, maybe they're putting this 2-14 guy up against a kid that's 12-0. I wonder who's in that fight, you know.
No, he's been matched up very lightly in his career. He's a guy that likes to fight but doesn't like to train. And his manager tried to match him with people that he can beat.
Maybe it's not his fault, and it's obviously the fighter's fault. You have to have some pride in what you're doing. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, it's a matter of, do I want to win more than he does? Yeah, I do. I mean, that was just me. I would, you know, I'd go the extra mile. You know, I mean, he might be doing it, so I'm not going to let him get anything over on me. I'm going to be there. I'm going to do it. I'm going to run that extra mile, or I'm going to start those extra rounds, or I'm going to hit that bag extra when I'm tired as I am already. But you got to push yourself. So, you know, it's a rough sport. So my suggestion to him, find a different trade.
Well, I appreciate that. And, when you were talking about that, you referenced back to your fight with Jimmy Paul. And, you know, I was looking up Jimmy Paul's record, and he never seemed to be the same after he come into battle with you for 15 rounds. Could you kind of describe that fight a little bit more, Jimmy Paul?
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of them didn't. You know, a lot of them weren't the same. I fought Chris Calvin, and, you know, and he didn't do much after I fought him. I fought Freddie Roach, knocked him out, and no, he fought a couple times after I fought him, and he didn't do much. And, you know, Edwin Corret, you know, he didn't do much after I fought him. I mean, I wasn't a heavy puncher, but I had, you know, I wasn't a big one-punch knockout fighter, but I had heavy hands. You know, and I'm constantly coming at you. You know, it's like taking a dull axe and chopping a tree. You know, eventually that tree's going to fall down. Might not be right now, might not be in a little while, but it's going to fall down. So, and that was my philosophy. I'm coming at you. You're going to have to be in good shape, but I'm coming at you. And if you're going to be able to keep me off you, then you're a better man than I am. So, condition does that. When you're in great condition like that, you can keep going, keep going, and keep going. But when you're not, then you go into a survival mode instead of attack mode. You know, you got two mindsets. If you're not in shape and you know you're not in shape, you're going to go out and try to BS, and you're going to try to fight a minute of each time. You're going to hit, you know, grab like Hector did, walk away, you know. But if you're in good shape and the attack mind mode set, then you're going right at him from round one. You're going hard and heavy at him.
Yeah, I know there were some upset people here in Detroit after you beat Paul because they were expecting a lot bigger things out of him.
Yeah, well, you know, he was a good fighter, and I mean, Emmanuel Stewart happened. I got married 2 days later, and Emmanuel Stewart and Fulton Thomas were in my wedding, and it was nice. They stopped by when I was getting married. So Emmanuel's always been a class act. I mean, you know, they took that fight because I was in the top 12. I was number 12 rated, and they had to go. You know, they had to fight every few years, every few months. You know, you only got to fight one mandatory defense once a year, and I was number 12, so the Emmanuel and him were looking up my name or going through the ratings and said, let's pick that guy, because they really didn't know me. But Emmanuel came and told me after, he goes, man, we obviously made a mistake.
Yeah, I had the pleasure of meeting Emmanuel Stewart also, and he is a really class act, in my opinion. What do you think about that heavyweight up there, Chauncey Welliver? We got him on the phone with us, Greg.
Well, Chauncey's another one that doesn't like to train. You know, Chauncey's got a lot of talent, but Chauncey don't like to train. Chauncey can't push himself away from the dinner table. You know, I mean, Chauncey could be out there fighting. He could be beating half these guys that are fighting. Look at Holyfield. Fought the other night against that big, goofy Russian. Well, 12 rounds with him, and he's 46 years old. You know, Chauncey's got he's a southpaw, you know, but Chauncey knows as well as I know that Chauncey doesn't train like he should, or Chauncey could do something. But, you know, it's a lot easier talking about it than doing it. You have to go in there and you have to do it. You have to do it. And it's, you know, it's no fun when your buddies are out drinking going, come on, man, you don't need to go to the gym. Let's go get stoned. Let's go get drunk. Come on. Oh, okay, maybe I'll just blow the gym off today and go with my buddies.
What do you got to say to that, Chauncey?
Nothing
hey,
he can't say because he knows the truth.
Greg tells I'm not a huge fan of training. Obviously, he knows that, you know. Yeah, I mean, it's something, you know, one thing, I want to throw in real quick. Greg Haugen is the best fighter to ever come out of the Northwest. That's Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Montana area, without a doubt. You know, to have him say something like that is kind of inspiring. You know, it makes me work out. You know, when Greg trained me, I worked my ass off. You know, once again, I couldn't get away from the dinner table or the lunch table or the breakfast table or anything.
It's all about discipline. It's just discipline, you know. It's just discipline, you know. And you got to want, you know, that's what I'm saying. It's got to be, you have to have that inner pride because, you know, when I didn't, you know, there's 100 ways I could talk myself out of going to the gym or not going to run, you know. But when I start thinking about the guy that I'm fighting and he's probably doing it, that got me up and got me going. Why? Because I didn't want him having an advantage over me. I didn't want that. You know, I was too competitive. And, you know, I mean, when I stopped fighting, I could still fight. But it was the fact of the matter is I wasn't the same fighter as I used to be. My skills weren't the same. And when I'm 12 rounds with a guy that I should be knocking out in 2 or 3 rounds, that's telling me it's time to get out of there. You know, and condition will overcome a lot of fight, a lot of skill. But, you know, and Chauncey just does training, and he, you know, and I'll tell you this, if Chauncey got himself in shape, dedicated 6 months of 1 year to just Chauncey, I guarantee at the end of that 6 months, if he was in shape and doing the things he was supposed to be doing every day and doing it diligently, Chauncey could make, you know, he could make some noise. I'm telling you, the kid can fight, and plus he's got southpaw. He's a southpaw. That's an added advantage because when you're taught to fight, most guys are taught to fight with right-handers. They're not taught to fight with southpaws. So it's an added advantage anytime a southpaw fights a right-hander. You know, it's just, you know, and plus Chauncey's tougher now. You know, he takes a good punch. You know, I mean, he can make some serious money. Being a white boy out there, in the heavyweight division, come on, man. You know, but he doesn't want to do it. He doesn't want to do what he needs to do. And I'm telling you that truthfully, Chauncey. You got skills, man. You know, you got skills from nobody. I don't know who showed you or if it's just natural or somebody's
Hello?
Oh.
Must have lost Greg there.
Well, see if you can get him back, because we haven't yet to ask him about the Julio Cesar Chavez fight.
Yeah, I will go ahead and call him back. He's on a roll tonight here with all you fighters. I wasn't expecting that, but...
Oh, no, I love it. You know, I mean, Greg, you know, he's very... he loves his sport, you know, and if you don't take it seriously, he'll voice his opinion. You know, I just got it.
Well, I'm actually glad because you guys are such good buddies and everything and know each other very well, and then old Kid Thunder don't feel so singled out there. But I'm going to go ahead and switch over and try to call Greg back because we got about 20 minutes before we're going to call Pinklin Thomas, and we'd like to get in that discussion about Mexico City there.
right.
So I'll leave you two for a minute.
All right. Alone with a girl. This is perfect.
Yeah. Where do you live now?
No, great. I'm in Spokane now, but I live between Spokane and New Zealand. So just kind of going back and forth and love being a Kiwi, love being American.
Nice.
What, are you hanging up on me?
No, you just disappeared off the line. I don't think I thought it happened on your end, but I'm glad.
No, it's probably that crappy T-Mobile service I got. You know, it's snowing. We got about a foot of snow on the ground right now, and it's coming down heavy right now. And I don't know. This looks like Idaho or Montana right now. It's a winter wonderland out there.
Yeah, we got about 16 here in Detroit, and I think they said they got about 18 over in Boston. But we knew we had to call you back because we have not heard about your fight with Chavez yet.
That wasn't a very good fight. I was going through a tough divorce, and my mind wasn't in it. You know, if you're not 110% fighting a guy like that, you're going to be exposed, and you're going to be exposed quickly. And I was, and, my head and heart weren't in the fight. I couldn't have beat my son that day, and, I was in the middle of a divorce of my childhood sweetheart, somebody that, we'd been together for 20 years, and it was not the kind of thing that I'd wish on anybody. That as I look back on my career, that's the one I wish I had back to do over and to train right for that fight. And that's one fight I didn't train for like I normally train for my fights, because I go out, I threw a lazy. I haven't seen the fight, but I got it in my head. I got the video in my head. I threw a lazy left jab, countered with a hard right. And that took my legs away from me for the rest of the fight. I was constantly trying to get my legs back. Well, normally I was in good shape and I could take those shots. I'd absorb them and I'd come back. But, when you're not in shape and, you're trying to BS, you're not going to BS against a good fighter like that. And, I was exposed. But I was the only guy that would go down there and fight him there. Everybody else was scared, and I've never been one to be scared of anything. So, it was fun.
You sure promoted the hell out of that fight. They come out in droves to watch you hopefully get your butt kicked here. What was the comment about the Mexican cab drivers?
Well, there's a sports writer down there asking me if I was scared to death. Aren't you scared for your life? I'm just, why? He's a man, Yeah, he's 88-0 or whatever, but he's fought it. He's got a pumped up record from fighting a lot of Tijuana cab drivers. After the fight, I admitted they were tough cab drivers. He was a better man that day.
Hey, we got another caller on the line. You willing to take a call, Greg?
Yeah, but I didn't know if Chauncey was able to hear me talking when I told him, but he's a good fighter, and if he'd get his butt in shape, give himself 6 months, he can make some money. But
all right, we're going to click this caller on, see if
right.
they got anything for you, and then we're going to wrap this up here in about 10 minutes.
Sounds good.
All right. Caller, you're on the ropes.
Yeah, this is Fernando Lopez. I'm a Tijuana cab driver, and I want to talk to your Kurt Hellion about this insult to my family and me and our business.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, man. Are you driving a Volkswagen?
It's a fuel-efficient automobile, okay?
The yellow Volkswagen with the front seat taken out.
It's a mini bike.
Car? Huh?
No. It's a mini bike.
It's a mini bike, huh? Well, you're moving up. Keep going. You might get that car one day.
This is Andrew Hartley's great manager, Stacy Goodnight Goodson. He told me somebody was talking bad about me on the radio.
No, I wasn't talking bad about you. I was just asking the kid why he was 2-14. Found out that it's not because he has an idiot for a manager. It's because he doesn't train.
Well, you don't have to train, do you? Well, wait, maybe that's why I lost 37 times. Oh, yeah, okay.
Well, That's not something to be proud of, though. You know, I mean, I lost 10 times.
I lost 37 times. It's a bitch. Believe me, I agree. You should have done some push-ups or something. I should have did some push-ups. I think maybe some setups.
Stacy Goodson's also an advocate for autism, like yourself, Greg. He has two kids
who
are autistic.
Absolutely, that's what every living breath is about right now, man. Every day.
Yeah, my grandson, he's been afflicted by that stuff, and so it's something that, you know, I'm pretty passionate about. I want to get people's awareness and get it out there and let people know what's going on. And
what's going on is our government is hiding the fact that they still put the Damarisol in the vaccines that they give
us mercury
today.
It's the mercury.
It's called Damarisol. It's something that they still put in there today. And our one in every 150 kids is worth the sacrifice for the greater good of the nation, the way they look at it. Unless it's your own kid. And unless you've got two of them like I do, it's, you know, a double jeopardy there. It's even worse. So, yeah, they don't know.
That's why we're not. I got a 7-month-old grandson now, Gregory. And we're not going to get him vaccinated. I've been doing a lot of stuff up here with autism, and it's, you know, there's other ways around getting these kids that, you know, that vaccinated, the stuff that they need to go to school with. So, yeah, I'm a firm believer in that.
I'd like to see him try to give my kids the shots again. Stick that needle in there.
It's a bad deal, you know. I mean, it's just something out there, and every, you know, the more I'm talking to people, the more I'm finding out that somebody that I know or they know has it. And, you know, I mean, and as far as every one in 150 kids, I think it's far more than that. I think it's one in every 10 or 15.
Well, it's more like probably one in every 100, because most people wait till their kid goes to school to tell people that, hey, my kid's got a problem. Fortunately for my kids, I found it out pretty early, like 2 and 3 years of age, or 4, 3 and 4, and we've been doing therapy, and, you know, 1 hour of therapy is $200, you know?
Exactly. Well, you know, and I'm hoping with the advances in medicine, you know, every 5 or so years, I'm hoping, you know, by the time he's 10 years old, because he's almost 6 now, you know, by the time he's 10 or 11, then maybe they'll figure something out. But, you know, it's all about the drug manufacturers making money. You know, they don't want to give out anything that's going to cure anything or do anything that's going to help them. They want to make the almighty dollar.
Well, if you like I said, I'm going to take my kids to Costa Rica. They got this thing called adult stem cell treatment. You can see it on my website that I'm trying to raise money for. It's called KOAutism.com, and it says the donation thing. It's got on there shows that this father takes his son down there and he gets his treatment. And he said, like, first treatment was like, you know, he was already reading and everything, you know. And
well, a lot of the stuff, too, is on the diet, you know. I mean, with the diet, that helps. But, you know, they got this one doctor out that's got some new stuff where they I'm not sure exactly what vitamin is. It's either vitamin C or vitamin B or something like that. What they do is they overdose the kid's system on the vitamin, and the vitamin starts leaching out that metal from the shots that they got,
right.
and then they're finding some good results with that too. So, I mean, you know, and that's what I'm saying. You know, hopefully in the next few years they're going to figure out what this is. I mean, I'm sure they already know what it is, and you know, most of us do that deal with it. It's a shot. You know, my grandson was fine until he got inoculated.
Absolutely.
So,
that's exactly what
happened
to my kid.
Yeah, I mean, my grandson
was
fine until he was about 4.
Yeah,
so.
I took my kid to get his shots. They put, like, probably, it looked like 4 syringes of stuff that I didn't even think he had enough blood in his body to dilute the medicine that they put in it. And, you know, like I said, the Damarisol they put in there for like 40 years now. And something's happened to where the kids are getting too much of it now. Preserve it because they're storing it in these warehouses for years and years, and that's why they're putting more and more in there, and it's just poisoning our kids.
It's a bad deal, but yeah, I'll get on your website. I'll check it out, check mine out, and we'll be in touch.
What's your website again?
GregHauganFoundation.com.
Okay, mine's KO autism.
KO autism?
Yeah, KO.
Well, right on. That's easy to remember. I'll get on that. You know, I'm not a big computer guy. I'm pretty stupid when it comes to computers. So, but I'll get on it.
So I don't. So Andrew didn't book me in a fight or something. I was wondering. I was making sure on that because he called me. I didn't know y'all show was today. Or I was going to check it out. But anyway, go ahead, guys. I just checking in and see what was going on. Take it easy.
All right, take care.
All right, bye-bye.
So, Greg, back to your own boxing career real quickly. What was it like to fight in front of 132,000 people?
It wasn't very good because I didn't do very well, you know. And they were pretty hostile. They were throwing things at us. It wasn't real nice. I came out to Born in the USA with the red, white, and blue American flag on. And they were mad at me, so they were throwing things at us. And that's the one fight that I really regret out of the whole bunch. That, you know, maybe the boycott and the Whitaker fight, just going out there not fighting like I was capable of. But, you can't dwell on things. And it's one of those things where I look back and, you know, I wish I would have did better. But like I said, when you're fighting a guy that's that good, you need to be 110%, because if you're not, it's going to show.
Yeah, I read a lot of estimates that said maybe the actual attendance was a lot higher than 132,000.
Well, yeah, he was giving away tickets for like five pesos, you know, the very top row nosebleed, you know, and they're throwing these pesos at us, which is, you know, like a silver dollar, American silver dollar from the third level of a soccer stadium at us, you know, and pelting us with it and pelting us with bags of piss and shit. And yeah, it was ugly. You know?
Well, I want to open it up to Chauncey for the last question because he knows you so well in case we missed anything. And you got anything you want to fire away to the champ, Chauncey?
Oh, yeah. Well, just a couple small things. A couple things I know, but got to let the listeners know. You know, Greg, you have three fights with Pazienza, two with Camacho, two very big rivalries. You know, each of those guys hated you, you know, as well as you hated them. Did you kind of get under their skin just to kind of take them off their game, or did you really have a hate for these guys?
No, it was just psychological warfare. You know, it's getting under their skin and trying, you know, as you see in the first Camacho fight, it worked because, you know, he tried to sucker punch me at the start of the 12th round, and that's how they say I won the fight. Well, you know, if you watch the second fight, I got him to take a point away from the game in the 11th round because I was just talking to him the whole fight. You know, come on, you Puerto Rican homo, come on. You know, I mean, I was just hitting him as I was hitting him. I'm laughing at him and tagging him. And, you know, and I was just trying to tag match him because when you get a guy that's so mad at you and he wants to rip your head off and he's going to be, you know, and then he gets out of his game plan, you know, and then he gets out of his mindset or his, you know, his game that he has set for you. And once you get out of their game plan and they want to start throwing haymakers and taking your head off, you've done what you wanted to do. You've taken him out of this fight. So, you know, and that psychological warfare is just as strong or just as powerful as anything that goes on in the ring because, you know, you can win fights before fights, weigh-ins, you know, just mind, you know, just trying to mind screw them, you know. I mean, if you know what you're talking about, you know, it's like I used to talk to these guys that come in the weigh-in, you know. And they start telling me how bad they're going to flip up on me, and I said, that's fine. You know, and a couple days before the fight, like Pazienza, you know, he had 25, 30 guys around him all the time. Well, me, I travel with two or three guys, my three trainers, and that was about it. And like I told him, I said, you know, only you know, Benny, when you're sitting in the hotel room at night by yourself, if you did the right thing, you won't have all your cronies around you telling you how great you are. Only you are going to, when you sit there at night by yourself, only you know if you took the shortcuts or if you did the right thing. And I'm telling you what, if they didn't train like they thought they should have trained or if they didn't train like they should have, well, then it's going to start wearing on them, and they're going to wear on them, you know, and they're going to be thinking, man, I should have did this, I should have did that. And pretty soon by fight times comes around, they've had a day and a half to think about it. They're mentally wore out, thinking, man, I should have did this. Big. any little advantage you can get in the fight game is a big advantage, because if you can get a little advantage here, a little advantage there, a little advantage here, pretty soon those little advantages add up to one big advantage. So, you know, and I was telling you before, I don't know if you're Chauncey, but, you know, I guarantee, how old are you now?
I'm 25.
Huh?
25 years old.
You're 25, still a baby. I tell you what, and I guarantee you, if you listen to me, you know, here it is coming up at the end of the year. You give yourself till, you know, till January 2010. Here it is, January 2009. I guarantee you, you give yourself 1 year. 1 year of just doing the right things, staying away from your buddies, training, being in gym 5 days of the week, on the road 4 or 5 days of the week. I guarantee you, by January 2010, dude, you could be making some serious money because you're southpaw and you're white and you can fight. It's lack of condition that you don't have. And when, you know, you don't have condition, you go out in these fights in a different mindset. You're trying to survive. You're not in the mindset of attack. The mindset of laying back and trying to BS so you can survive that round. Big difference. You know, and I tell you what, you give yourself till the time you're 27 years old or whatever it is, you're going to be in 2010, which is 1 year. I guarantee you I could have you making big money. But it's all up to Chauncey. It's not up to me. You could tell me, yeah, I ran. You know, I did this, I did that. But if you didn't do it, you're not lying to me. You're only lying to yourself. Okay? I mean, you know, you're a white kid. You can fight yourself, Paul. You give yourself 1 year of just doing the right thing by training and being in the gym 5 days a week, being on the road, I guarantee you, you could make some serious coin in 1 year, dude. You know, and if you didn't see results by 2010, you get to say, screw it, I'm not doing it. But you know, once you start seeing the results after 6 months, then that's going to motivate you to train even harder. You want even more. You know, I'm telling you, I know. Try it. Make a New Year's commitment to Chauncey and do one thing for Chauncey that, you know, because you haven't obviously done a lot for yourself. Make a commitment to yourself for 1 year and do what I tell you. And if you don't see results in 6 months, then you can say screw it. But I guarantee you within this time next year, dude, you're going to be seriously in, you know, a situation where you're in the top 10, you're making money, you're beating these Russian clowns that, you know, that got that straight stand-up fight action, the European style. I'm telling you, give yourself 1 year and see if I'm telling you, blowing smoke up your butt.
Well, I surely know that I'm a huge Chauncey Welliver fan, and I hope that he does take that advice. But with that, we're going to have to thank you for being on here.
Why, you're a young man. You're still 25. That's the prime of your career. You could go from 25 to 30, and you could have more money than your kids' grandkids will spend. Isn't that worth 1 year of hard work?
It really is. That's
where you got to look inside yourself and question yourself and find out what's in there. Because, yeah, I'm telling you, the human body is an amazing machine. The amount of abuse and punishment you can put it through is mind-boggling. And I know you can fight. You get yourself in the gym, get yourself in some shape, you can make some serious money, Chauncey.
Well, thank
All
you
right?
very much for that, Greg.
Yeah, I appreciate
you having me on a lot, Greg.
Think
about doing that for Chauncey for the new year. I'm gonna be a new Chauncey. I'm not going to hang out with my buddies, and I'm not going to do this. I'm going to do what's good for Chauncey. Not, you know, 1 year, man. 1 year, and I guarantee you'll see results, and you'll say, okay, I see what he's saying. You know, and
well,
if you're serious.
One thing I can say is I respect everything you say, Greg. I mean, we need, you know, for people that don't know, Greg used to train me. I learned more in the 1 month I was with Greg than I've learned, you know, with Jack Mosley, all those guys, you know, for, you know, years. You know, I mean, hey, Greg, you know, I mean, maybe we
Well,
need
those
to,
guys are
you know,
trainers.
You know,
I mean, you know, they
work together, you know, again.
Well, you know where I'm at. Like I said, you get your ass in shape and you can make some serious money, man. It's all up to Chauncey. Does Chauncey want it or does Chauncey not want it? That's what it boils down to. I can tell you what to do all day long, but I can't make you do it. You know, I can't babysit you, so you're going to have to do that on your own. And you're going to have to show that you're committed and dedicated to Chauncey. Not to anybody else, but to Chauncey. Give Chauncey 1 year and see where you're at this time next year, and you'll say, shit, Hogan, you're right, man. All right?
All righty.
All right,
thanks a lot for coming on
tonight,
Greg. I appreciate it.
Not a problem.
Thank you very much, Greg. You're an excellent guest.
Not a problem. Anytime, guys. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, buddy.
Good
night. All righty, that was Mr. Greg Howden, and that's the type of guest that we want on. It is no-nonsense, willing to give his opinion, exactly what he thinks about everything. And hopefully Mr. Pinklin Thomas will be just as good of a guest, and what I'm going to do is click over right now and go ahead and call Pinklin up. I'll be back with you in a couple seconds here, folks.
Okay.
Greg is a great guy to have that advice from. You know, it's definitely great motivation.
Yeah, you're going to take it.
Wait, it almost makes me feel like I need to go down to the gym right now.
Yeah.
But being a heavyweight, I'll need a week.
There you go.
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system.
Well, just give him another try.
You guys still there?
Yeah, we're still here.
Well, unfortunately, that did not go well. I'm going to go ahead and try to call back. I was expecting Pinklin to answer right away because I have talked to him 3, 4, or 5 different times, and he's been pretty punctual, but I'll go ahead and try to call him back one more time. If not, then we'll just conclude the last half hour of the show with the Mr. Welliver hour. But I'll be back in 1 second.
I need to cross my fingers and say, please don't answer Pinklin. The Chauncey Welliver hour sounds just terrific. But then again, we all have major questions for Pinklin Thomas. He's been there, done that, and won that. So.
Yep. He's been in there with a prime Mike Tyson, so should be interesting.
You know, the man's a great fighter. Lots of questions got to be asked to him.
Try it again.
Hello?
Hello, Mr. Pinklin Thomas. You're on the Ropes radio. You're with the Motor City Pole Checker, Boston's boxing girl, and your buddy Chauncey Welliver.
Hey, what's going on? And hey, Chauncey, what's happening, baby?
Pretty good. How you doing, Pinklin? What's going down with you?
Hey, man, everything cool. I'm hanging like wet clothes on the line, drip drying. You know, I'm here in Florida. I know y'all dealing with that snow back there. It got kind of cool here today, but literally got 80 degrees yesterday, so the temperature just dropped.
Yeah, you were calling.
You know, I out of all 4 people on the phone right now, you're the only one with sunshine, so I think we're all a little bit envious.
Check that out. Hold on for a minute, man. My dog making a bunch of noise. I'm going to knock him out, okay? Hold on for a minute.
Yeah.
Well, it's good to hear the champ's still ready to knock people out.
Every time I've been talking to him, he's been on his way back and forth from the gym, so.
Hey, let's do an interview. Take him out. Don't come this bus now, man. All right, man, okay.
Get him straightened out?
All I got to do is look at him mean, man. You know, I still got that look. He kind of freak out when he see that. Oh, man. How's it going, man? How's everything happening?
Well, it's cold up here in Detroit. You know, like we talked about yesterday, I kind of wish I was down there in the sun, but I am very grateful to have you on here tonight, former heavyweight champion of the world. Unfortunately, I lost my co-host, but you still have me and Mr. Welliver on the line here. And was hoping maybe we could get you to comment a little bit on what you're currently doing right now. I know we talked a little bit about that Puerto Rican strawweight you're working with.
Yeah, I'm working with him, and well, he's a my pet project. I'm really digging him. He do everything I ask him to, and I'm just excited about him. He's had over 200 amateur fights. He fought out of Puerto Rico. He started boxing about 7 years old. He stopped when he was about 13 and a half when he come over here, and he hadn't fought in about 4.5 years when I got him. But he was had been training by a guy who really didn't know what he was doing. So the kid was literally being, not taken care of properly. So I've taken him under my wings, and I've really put some muscle on him, put a couple pounds on him, making him strong and confident. And right now I'm working on a promotional group here in town. I'm looking to possibly do a show the first part of the year. And I did mention something to Chauncey about doing something with him out there on the West Coast, which I hope Chauncey will look out for the brother.
We'll put him in. Any fighter that works with Pinkland Thomas is definitely a good fighter, so we're definitely going to bring him out.
Well, I tell you, I'm really excited about him for this reason, because as I see it, I'm really disappointed with the heavyweight division and where it's working now. I'm not even excited to even find out who's in the division. What I do want to establish, and I want to find out, is more about the strawweight division, the champion, and how I go about conquering the champion. I want to set up a plan, as I set up for myself, to go after the title. And this kid is 18 years old. And I think he can hold it for a long time, bring money to the game in the strawweight division, and make it one of the most exciting divisions it is. Because the little guys, they throw a lot of punches, but you don't see big knockouts. So what I've done with him is, and what I plan to do with him is to make him a knockout king.
Hey, y'all, what's his name so we can keep on the lookout for him?
His name is Javier Soto.
Soto, all right.
Javier Soto. Yeah, so beyond that, working with Javier, I work with my daughter. She's a runner. She went to the Junior Olympics twice, 13 and 15, and she's been to the Nationals 4 times. And I'm getting her ready now. She's in high school. She's going to be running. I'm trying to get her run for a scholarship, and she had to be running again this summer in the summer leagues. And hopefully, of course, she'll go to the Junior Olympics again. Her goal is to go to the 2012 Olympics. And I think that she's got a great opportunity to do that.
Well, wish you the best of luck with that. There's nothing bigger than representing your country at the Olympics.
Nothing bigger than that, man. Outside of that, man, let me see. I work with a company called Wackenhut. And Wackenhut is a company that goes all over the country. It's security. And I've been doing that for about a couple months now, but I've got connection with the general manager, and we've come really close, and they're opening up some doors for me in the organization that I think I might be in a position to be doing some public relations for them that will put me on the move and travel a little bit, to do some things. And I'm excited about that, because Wagonhead is a great company to work for.
Yeah, I wish you the best of luck with that. You sound like you handle yourself very, very well from the few phone conversations that I've had with you. So, public relations sounds like it's right down your alley.
Well, I haven't taken too many punches. I've saved myself from that. I've managed to get in and get out and secure myself with being able to to carry myself well, to compensate well. And I thought that would be one of the most important parts after retirement, is to be able to do that. So outside of that, where Decatur, Michigan is, right?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Well, Decatur, Michigan, there was an organization there called Decatur Cares. And our Decatur Cares came Project Pink, which is by neighborhood kids. You can research that. The gentleman by the name of Mike Fivers is there. I have his number. I can give it to you later. You can call him. What's happening now is that the organization, this nonprofit, is literally, well, I think it's getting ready to change over to Orlando Cares, which is going to be my nonprofit. Mike Cyphers is going to remain on the board. I'm putting together a board of directors here in Orlando. And so it's going to be the Orlando Cares Project thing. And it's going to be here in Orlando, which is going to be a nonprofit group to help young people, young kids, and deprived, and things of that nature. So along with, I have a profit organization called Championship Development that I want to, you know, I've got already, and I'm established. That's going to be for my promotional, you know, working my shows here. So hopefully everything will come together at the first of the year. I give it all up to the master builder, and hopefully he'll bless me, you know.
Hey, I hear that, and it's great to hear about guys that are sticking around and helping out the communities and keeping boxing going. But not only that, you know, looking out for the youngsters in their community. But I know you said you didn't take too many punches, but we were hoping we could get some questions in about the punches that you did end up taking.
Well, man, you know, anything you want to ask me, you know, I think I got an answer for it because I ain't got no punches to pull, you know.
Boy.
So outside of maybe getting hit, I might, I had a pretty good defense too, you know.
So, Boxing Girl, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
You want to go ahead and shoot out the first question to the champ?
Uh-oh, I'm getting ready to get hit by somebody. What's your name, dear?
Can't say my name on the internet, but I go by Boxing Girl.
Okay, Boxing Girl, that's good enough for me.
All right, well, maybe can you tell us a little bit about the fight that you won your title in? You fought Tim Witherspoon in 84?
Yeah, I fought Tim Witherspoon in 84. That was a great opportunity for me. When I fought Tim, I was preparing for him. I paired with a heavyweight out of Vancouver. His name is Kenny LaCosta, Art Savage, Tyrone Armstrong. I had a kid. I was working with David Sparnburn, a man who trained out of Frazier's. I got ready there, took it to Vegas. I think I had injured, I bruised my knuckle, my right knuckle, and I was going to Temple University, taking ultrasound treatment. It was funny, the day of the fight, This is the truth. I took a cortisone shot in the morning. I took one in the afternoon, the 2 hours before the fight, because I couldn't hardly even touch my right hand. And it was just terrible. I heard it in sparring. And anyway, the fight went off. And, Witherspoon was, known to have a good jab and a good defense and what have you. And I knew Jim from South Philly. I was in North Philly at Frazier's, and Slim Perkins trained him, and I knew Slim, his style pretty much, you know. So, I got to Philly, and I was on my way up. I had a tendency to go in the ring before I would box or would loosen up. I would shadow box each one of these guys in my mind, whether it was Coney Page, Chaplin, Tillis, guys who was coming up, Larry Holmes. I would box these guys in my mind. So really, when the opportunity came for me to fight him, you know, I knew what I had to do to be up against. But when I had to deal with him with my right hand, it just came natural for me to throw it. You know, of course, when you go to war and when you're in a fight, you know, you just do what you got to do, you know. But I know that I had a good jab, and I wasn't going to let him out jab me. So it was just a matter of who wanted it more. And I think I wanted it more that night. And when I did win it, it was like 100 pounds lift off my shoulder.
Yeah, speaking of your jab, you worked that to excellent effect at the beginning of your fight with Mike Tyson there.
Well, the fight with Mike Tyson, you know, I always have to talk about that because, I mean, I really didn't, get my just due. I didn't prove myself the way I wanted to, and the reason why was because about 6 weeks before the fight, I broke my shoulder. I didn't know it. Thought I had just sprung it. I was training out in Hoover Street Gym with Scrap Iron Johnson in L.A., and what happened, I was working with a fighter named Mark Wheels, and Mark Me and him exchanged right hands. I popped my shoulder, and I didn't know. I went to a chiropractor in Melrose, Hollywood, and he told me to put in a sling because, you know, they don't believe in medicine. And put in a sling, put it on the ice pack, lay off for 3 days and go back. So that's what I did instead of going to get an x-ray and what have you. So anyway, we got an eye contact that, you know, if it popped out, you know, he's going to have to change eyes, have to do something else. And I, it was difficult for me to skip rope, or it was difficult for me to hit speed bag, anything. But anyway, after the fact, when it got down to 3 weeks before the fight, I told Angelo about it. I told Angelo about it when it happened. He told me to pull out. I said, man, I'm not pulling out. I beat that bum with my left hand. So anyway, when I got there, when I was about two or three rounds, you know, it would pop out, and he would pull me off, and I would, you know, go into doing something else, whether it was feedback or a skip rope or something. But I really didn't have nothing to it. So I really wasn't 100%. The style that I told the fight to Don King, I told Don how I was going to whoop him the way Douglas whooped him. And I told him I stuck and moved right in front of Don. I told him this way I'm going to whoop that chump. And unfortunately, when that happened to my shoulder, I had to change my whole style. I put my right hand on my chin and just work my jab, tie him up, walking backwards, things of that nature. But what happened was that I think the first round he came out strong, which he always did, and I knew that was going to happen. The second round, he might have hit me one time. The second, third round, he couldn't hit me. The fourth round, you know, I literally won. They thought they could have called that third round even. The fourth round I won. The fifth round I won by the judges. And then my glove split. After my glove split, then they told Angelo to go get a glove for me. They say, Angelo, they said, Thomas, your glove split. I said, what you want me to do? I ain't say it like that. I was pissed off, right? And he said, but Angelo cut it off of him. Angelo cut my glove off. So, you know, my glove's supposed to be a ringside. Well, wasn't that ringside. It was at the outside parking lot. So the fight was in the outside parking lot and at the Hilton Hotel. They hadn't built the dressing room yet, so it was in a portable, I mean, one of them little trailers. So they had to go about 30, 40 yards to a trailer to about 10,000 people out there in the parking lot to get another glove. He's going to get the glove, come back. But by that time, him and Kevin Rooney, man, they're kissing and hugging. He's sucking up air, talking about with bad intentions, champ, bad intentions, and breathe, you know, they're breathing. And by the time the guy get back with the glove, I'm pissed off. They done cut my glove off, and you can see that on the fight. And by the time the bell rang, they say, hurry up and put the glove on him, Angelo. The bell going to ring. Ding, as soon as he put it on. Well, man, look, my mind is shot out. I'm mad. He's ready. He's fired up, ready to go because, you know, Kevin been in his ear. So we go out, we boxing and stuff. You know, my strategy now, you know, my mind is not where my head was. And Tyson comes out, boom, he hits me with a shot, my shoulder pops out, it goes down, my arm goes down, I get hit with all these unanswered punches. All I was thinking about was not getting knocked out like the rest of them bums was getting knocked out in the first or second round. So I took the count, got up at the count of 8 or 9, and I just didn't want to be counted out on the canvas, but I knew that I couldn't continue. And that's how the fight ended.
Wow, that's a shame there, you know.
That's the real deal.
You're doing really well, but Boxing Girl, you got another question from Mr. Thomas?
What was it like working with the legendary Angelo Dundee? You know, he's worked with so many great champions.
Are you kidding me? Angelo was the greatest. I mean, I'm not saying that just because of that. And me and Angelo still talk. I probably haven't talked to him in about a week or so, but Angelo's my buddy. I mean, I love that guy to death. I mean, it's nothing like Angelo. It's the biggest, it's the greatest difference. I mean, I had Angelo in my corner when I fought Witherspoon. I had Angelo in my corner when I fought Weaver. And for whatever reason, there was a conflict that came about that he wasn't in my corner when I fought Trevor Burbick when I lost the title. And I think of the difference. It was people talking, saying that I wasn't going to pay Angelo and this, that, and the other. It was a bunch of contrast, and I think Angelo got discouraged, and I wasn't into what was going on, and they came between me and Angelo. The camps did, you know, promotion. And Angelo wasn't with me, and I told Angelo after the fight, I said, man, I said, after this, after the, I think it was after the third or fourth round, man, I missed you. I said, I missed you, man, you know, and I really did, because he was the kind of guy who could motivate you, you know, like, hey, you know, if you heard him in the Witherspoon fight, you know, three more minutes, baby, and you champion of the world, or come on, you know, he always just give you that energy. He had the tools, the mental, the verbal tools to keep you going. He was a teacher. He wasn't just a trainer. You know, it's the difference between the teacher and the trainer. He show you different skills, how to, you know, angle and throw punches and put yourself in position. And, you know, so, I mean, Angelo was the greatest, man. I love him to death, man.
Excellent. How about you, Mr. Welliver? You got a question for the champ here?
Got a couple, if you guys got a little bit of time.
Yeah, we got about 10 minutes left in the show here, so fire away.
All righty. Anklund, you fought many, many great prime fighters, guys like Alonzo Ratliff, James Tillis, Harry Cotea, Witherspoon, Tyson, Holyfield, Bo, Morrison. Who is the best? Who would you say is the best?
I'll tell you, a guy who I give a lot of credit to, Holyfield was a great fighter, no doubt about it. Holyfield was the second heavyweight fight Holyfield had. I wasn't 100% when I fought Holyfield, and he was fast. He wasn't a great puncher at that time, you know, he was fast. So, I mean, I got to give Holyfield a bunch of credit. But the guy in the heavyweight division who I really have to give credit to, and unfortunately he's gone, and that's Trevor Burbick. Trevor Burbick was a good fighter. He was a strong fighter. He was a puncher. What you've seen in Mike Tyson is when he fought, when Tyson hit that guy, was I think, and through the grapevine, I mean, I think Trevor wasn't 100% for the fight. I think he had his days, a few days before the fight, you know, not doing the right thing. You know, I ain't talking about drugs or nothing. I'm talking about, you know, just, you know, not being physically prepared because of maybe female tendencies, you know. I think he had his day with more than one. And I think that it took his edge off and took his strength from him, like Lila did Samson when she cut his hair. You know what I'm saying? And I think that he lost his championship after he won it from me. I think that's the way he lost that championship. And when I fought Trevor Burbick, of course, I wasn't 100% because I was going through some personal problems. I think it was really a divorce. And of course, I didn't have Angelo in my corner. And my wife and son wasn't at my fight. And they were the ones who was always there. So I had a whole lot going against me going in that, you know, in that fight. But, hey, I want to make it very clear. I have no excuses at all. You know, it was all good. I love it. I'm so glad that I just got the opportunity. When I got the opportunity with John Witherspoon, when I was able to defend my title, when I had the opportunity with Cozia, you know, when I fought Alfonso Rapp, with everybody Tillis, you know, every time I fought, when I fought the first HBO fight, the Night of Young Heavyweights in the casinos, you know, in New Jersey, when I guess it was Paige, Cooney, George Chaplin, different ones was on there. Jerry Cooney was the referee. Corey, you know. So, I mean, it was great. Everything was just fantastic. Now, that's where I'm at. Now, let's talk about what I want to talk about.
Well, we can't let you. We've got a little bit more than 5 minutes left in the show, but we can't let you off the phone without having you comment on Larry Holmes.
Yeah, right. You know I'm going to chew this phone up, man. I have to come back to Detroit. Peanut head bum. I hope he's on the phone right now. No, you know, I like Larry as a person, but not as a... Well, he's a great fighter. The greatest fight, one of the greatest fighters I've seen was him to fight Ken Norton. Him and Ken Norton, when they fought for that United States title, I mean, that was a fight that you'll never forget. But I think that Larry Holmes, as far as me, I'm concerned, is a peanut-head chump. And I'll call him a peanut-head chump to his face. And the reason why is because he didn't give me the opportunity that Ali gave him, a champion would give a challenger. Or a champion will give another champion to try to reunite the titles to come together. And I think that, you know, Larry knew I was a great jabber, a power jabber, and I wanted to compare them jabs together. I remember when Larry went to fight Page and he gave up the WBC title because they was going to strip him. They said they ain't wanting to, so... when they did that, I became the IBF, WBC, I'm going to say the WBC, the WBA number one contender after Greg Page was the fight with a spoon for the vacant WBC title because I was number three. We was number one in the IBF, and there was no champion. So I called, first I called Bob Lee. I called, got the vice president. Bob Lee was in Japan. I called him and I told him there was no way in God's history he was supposed to give Larry that title. They said we wasn't going to give it to him. He had to fight me. The next day in the paper, he was scheduled to fight Marvis Frazier or somebody. I don't know who he fought. But anyway, he fought everybody in the top 15. You'll see, and you can look it up in the history book. One thing I don't like is him always talking about he fought everybody, and he did. He did fight some great fighters, and he fought some great fights, but he didn't fight Pinklin Thomas.
Yeah, that is one of the shames when you look back at that error there. And we got about three more minutes in the show, but we'd be glad to have you over time for a little bit, if you wouldn't mind, Pinklin.
Well, go do what you got to do, man. I'm all right.
But, you know, one other thing I wanted you to clear up, too, was that whole deal back in 1999. I know we talked about it a little bit, and there was some conflicting reports out there. You were in negotiations to fight Holmes at that time, right?
Yeah, that was when they had the Legends Tournament that was going on, and I think Witherspoon and Page was going to fight again, and that's when Page came beat Witherspoon. Me and Larry Holmes again. It was some basketball player. I can't go out of South Carolina. He was a promoter. Can't call his name right now, but we was negotiating. Had worked on a contract for me to fight Larry. I was going to fight him for Lily Peanuts. And but at the end of the rainbow, when it all came down, the guy came to me. Don came to me at one point in time when I was continually pressing for Larry. He told me, Pink, look here, let's face it, man. Larry Holmes is not going to fight you. This was 14 years later. And Don told me that in 1985. And Larry Holmes is not going to fight you. You know? So, but anyway, that's history. I mean, that's just the way it went. That's just another part of history. But I do know, they're always showing things on the classic fights. About one punch knockouts. What about the punch I hit Mike Weaver with, huh?
Yeah.
Did I put him to sleep? He tried to get up and he, you know, he fell back down like a bucket of water. You know what I'm saying? But see, they don't really put out the real big deal about the glory days when I had my day, you know. But really, I ain't crying.
That's just a countdown to the show ending there, Pinklin.
Yeah, but I'm not qualming, man. Bottom line, man, I love Detroit. I love you guys, man. I love everything. What's your name? The female boxer? I can't call you by name. Look, one day I'll have opportunity to meet you. Chauncey, I'm going to give you a call later. We'll talk, okay?
All righty. Thanks a lot, Pinklin.
All righty, Pinklin. Let's keep in touch.
Okay, buddy. Yeah, thanks a lot so much. I appreciate it. I appreciate you. I appreciate the opportunity for you to give me an opportunity. Bye now.
All right. You take care, Pinklin. We'll keep in touch, buddy.
All right. You had Pinklin Thomas on. Not bad.
Pinklin Thomas, Greg Haugen, Chauncey Welliver, and Kid Thunder, and Dr. Goodnight. So we went from A to Z right there, baby.
Oh, yeah. Had quite
the beauty
show.
Is next week, you guys got Tommy Morrison and Mia St. John. So you get the best of all worlds when it comes to asking questions.
We're looking forward to that, and, you know, Chauncey's definitely the kingpin on getting us these people on. We appreciate that. We're about to go off here in 15 seconds, so you guys have a good night, and you go ahead and sign off here, Boxing Girl.
All right.
All right. Cheers, guys. Talk to you next week.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
You there, Boxing Girl? Well, that was the show today, folks. So I'm going to sign off for the Motor City Poll Checker here out of Detroit and Boston's finest female boxing radio personality, Boxing Girl. I want to give a special thanks out to Mr. Greg Haugen and Mr. Pinklin Thomas. It's great to hear a little bit of stories out of the former world champions that we have here. Both are class acts, and hopefully in the future we'll be able to catch up with them both. But we'll be talking to Tommy Morrison, hopefully Mia St. John next Monday as well. Give big shout out to my main man out of Spokane, Washington, Chauncey Welliver. So with that, folks, we're going to leave it to you guys. Let's keep it real, baby.
That's right. Reality checking on this. Street life, huh? Dookie, Scorpion, yeah, When I was young I used to dream of being rich, having a lot of houses and cars, couldn't know which one was which, and finding me a chicken getting hitched, living the fairy tale life perfect without a glitch. You think that this will bring me happiness, if at the end of every rainbow there was a treasure chest, sometimes having more is really less. Take a look inside yourself, you realize you're really blessed. No matter how you fathom blue, there's always someone who has it worse than you. Sometimes you gotta pay your dues, so don't worry, just push on through.
Keeping it real.
Gotta dig up all my people who'll be working on the future, though they know they gotta struggle.
Keeping it real.
To all my homies working on the 9-to-5 and doing right to keep themselves up out of trouble.
Keeping it real.
Although sometimes I know it seems impossible, there ain't no need in counting in your sorrow.
Keeping it real.
Things are as bad as they can be. You could be sure there'll be a better bet tomorrow. If I can ever got to have myself the house, the mansion, and the bed. I'm not the kind of brother who'd be making mad at. I got myself a weirdo, but we'd be kicking it as friends. It's not enough with me.